Thank you for being a listener of the Women in Tech podcast. To support the podcast and cheer us on, become an MVL, Most Valuable Listener, on our private feed where you'll have ad-free episodes and join us in Zoom meetups to meet other listeners of our podcast community. Go to womenintech.love, linked in the show notes.
Smart companies know that happy employees are productive employees. They're employees that show up every day excited to work, bring their best to the table, and that's the only way to lead a company anymore. If they don't respond in that way, that's a sign that that's an environment that you don't want to be in.
3, 2, 1. My name is Esprit Devora, host of the Women in Tech Show. The show means a lot to me. The reason why I wanted to create the Women in Tech Show is I wanted to create a positive piece of content, something where people can listen and say, if she can do it, so can I. Welcome back to the Women in Tech podcast, celebrating women in tech around the world. So excited for our next guest, Nick, coming at us from Los Angeles. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
So excited to have you on the show. To kick things off, why don't you go ahead and tell everybody a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, I'm Nat Lennox. I'm a creative tech marketer. I'm focused largely on demand generation and brand-led growth. And I've worked across a ton of industries. So fintech, deep tech, data services, cybersecurity, everything you can possibly think of.
Let's start from the beginning. When did you first become interested in technology?
I actually didn't switch to tech until I had spent 12 years at creative agencies. So it was a long, windy path full of twists and turns.
Tell us more about what it's like working at creative agencies, because I feel like gaining the skill set of working at a creative agency really up-levels you to know how to communicate cross-platform in so many different ways and so many different mediums. It's the best school, for lack of a better word, school for marketing. Although I prefer the word communications.
Yeah, I mean, in the early 2000s when I started, it was still a little bit like Mad Men. I got to tell you, I don't know if you have any, did you also work in creative agencies?
No, I just admire the best because when they do it right, they do it right. And so I read a lot of books on ad agencies. I've taken all the masterclass courses.
Yeah. Well, when we're talking about doing it right, you're probably referring to finding that deep emotional hook, right? And I think that was the benefit, right? So when you're working for big brands like, you know, Victoria's Secret was really big back in the day, and I got to work with them when they were in their heyday, have different feelings about that now. But when you're working for massive brands, you have to make a massive impact. So you're always looking for that kind of emotional hook or deeper level connection with your customer.
I mean, this is close to impossible to do right now on a podcast. So just as best, like maybe a 2 out of 10, what's a guidance you could give us? How do we start to find the emotional hook with our customer? We have so many founders listening, and then we have so many people that are passionate about the companies they work for, from engineers to product people. And we're all thinking about how do we up-level our job? And the way to do that is by having that connection to the customer. So what can we think about?
Yeah. So this is going to sound really fluffy. It's something I was kind of born with, but you can develop it over time. Find a reason to love every single person that you meet. Like find a reason to fall in love with them. I know that it sounds cheesy, right? But like until you really love people, like someone who has completely different beliefs than you, someone who's even like done terrible things in the world, like find that thing that makes that human being worthwhile and like really gives you the space to appreciate who they are, what they bring to the world, you know. And if when you can do that, when you can find truly love people and cultivate a love for different people from different walks of life with different experiences, that's the basis for figuring out how to connect with your customer, because your customer is a human being, whether it's on a B2B level or B2C level.
I absolutely love that. One of my favorite businessmen in the world, Raj, he operates that way. And I have a very hard time processing how he does that and continuously. How do you do that? Like, let's take like a safe bad person, like not something too dreary. So, I don't know. I can't even think of something right now that's like safe, but like not too bad, but bad. How do you?
Here's the thing. Most people are the hero of their own story, right? Okay. Like most people are trying to do good in the world in their own way. So like, let's look at Al Capone, right?
Okay.
Like, let's look at him, right? Because he's historical. So okay. we can't bring up it. When he spoke to people about what he had done, right? And he had robbed banks or whatever, you know, obviously people got caught in the crossfires, et cetera. When he talked about his life's work, he talked about how he had, you know, stolen from the rich to feed the poor like a modern day Robin Hood. Because with his background and his experience and what he had at his disposal, that's the only way that he knew to change the world for the better in his way. And when we look at it from the outside, all we see is like, oh, here was this like murderous villain, right? So like everyone is just trying to do their best given the tools that they have and the background and upbringing that they had. People are trying to make a difference in the world in their own way. And when you can really try to see the good in people and try to find a reason to fall in love with everyone, you can connect with your customer and understand your customer on a level that goes beyond what your competitors are doing, you know, and that's the basis of a great brand and a great marketing ecosystem.
Can you really do that like all the time? You must struggle with that sometimes.
So there are tools. I have some tools. So when you are looking at a customer, when you're looking at, you know, who is this person that you're trying to reach? And you're trying to really understand them and understand their motivations. I actually use the system of 6 human needs. It was made popular by Tony Robbins. It might sound cheesy again, like I know to a lot of people, this stuff sounds a little fluffy. But if you break it down into the 6 human needs that we're always striving for, so a sense of security, a feeling of contribution, a feeling of significance, a sense of variety, you know, and then you look at your customer through that lens, like what gives them that feeling? You know, if it's a B2B customer, it might be what gives them that feeling in their jobs because you're selling them a business product. If it's a B2C customer, it's what gives them that feeling in life. You know, and then you find the intersection between where your brand's purpose crosses their worldview, you know, based on all those needs and the things that they're striving for. That's where your brand starts to really resonate. That's where you build that deep emotional connection. So like going through and doing the research and figuring out, you know, what those 6 human needs are for your customer, that's a tool. It helps you get there and understand them and fall in love with them. And then you can build those connections from there.
That is incredibly powerful. And I'm so glad that you shared it. I don't think anything like that has been shared on the podcast. I think guidance like that would even just make us better humans overall. I know part of the culture and how we operate things, it's to never treat someone like a number. But you took it to such a deep level, this level that Raj takes it to, that I've never heard that. And maybe other listeners have, but I've never heard that. I mean, I know the saying that we're all the main character in our own story, but I've never had the note to take empathy that everyone's the main, like, and not just the main, I guess that's the clarification, not just the main character, but the main hero. That's what I wasn't getting, that everyone sees themselves as the hero in their story. And that changes. I'm like, oh, so yeah, I'm perceiving bank robbery. You're perceiving Robin Hood. Like,
yes. So you just have to figure out that what is driving you? How are you the hero?
I love that you shared that. Okay. So you had these incredible years of learning and execution at creative agencies. And you didn't consider yourself in tech yet at that point.
No, we had some tech customers, but honestly, at the creative agencies, I was really good at building these pitches because I was better in their marketing department than I was on client projects because I applied that same deep empathy to winning new customers. So we were going after like the Targets of the world, like Spanx. I remember we were going after when Spanx like first came on the scene, you know, like we were going after these massive accounts. Honestly, a lot of times there were like, you know, gray-haired guys in navy suits, like going and giving the pitches and like leading the, and so they'd look at me and like it, more and more it was a women-owned brands and women-focused brands that were really, I mean, this is early 2000s, right? So it's like a different world. We take it for granted now, right? That it's changed. They'd look at me and be like, Nat, what do women want? You know, a lot of the time. So, and I'm like, oh God.
No, age-old question.
How long do you have, buddy? Sit down, grab a coffee. But, you know, so I would apply this methodology to like really understanding why did this founder or this company, like, why did they feel the need to start this business? What do they care about? Like, what do they really want to bring their customers? What brings them a sense of significance and contribution in the world? And then I would apply that and I'd figure out where our agency's values crossed their own values and sense of purpose. And I would pitch them with that rather than just what we could do. Because, you know, a lot of people can build a great product and bring good creative work, but we understood them and could work for someone just like them and could also bring the great creative work. And so we won a ton of accounts that way. And it was a completely different way of thinking about it. Yeah. So I did that for a long time before I ever switched to tech.
Before we jump into your tech life, one last question about this creative life. How long would you say it reasonably takes to develop the understanding of empathy for the brand? Like everything you just shared, how long is that process? Are we talking about 1 month of research, 3 months, 1 year?
Good question. So it depends on who you are and where you're starting from, right? I was born an almost insane empath. Like to a point where I can't watch some movies without breaking down, right? I'm on a news diet, right? So for me, I came with this almost debilitating sense of empathy where I feel other people's pain on a deep level and their joy on a deep level. So I could spend some time with someone and really start to understand them. And that was a gift, you know? It's also a curse sometimes, right? Can be a really hard burden to carry. But even if you weren't born with that extreme empath view, by using some of those tools and spending time with your customer with no intent to sell them, only an intent to understand them, like you can go through the process. You can set out a, you know, 6-week timeline for yourself or a 4-week timeline for yourself if it's simply a pitch. And really talk to your customer's customer if you're doing B2B, you know, that kind of thing, and dig in there and build that empathy. But one thing that I do recommend to every business is to find those deep empaths on your team, regardless of their position or title, and allow them to be the ones to lead you through this process because they will have a natural capacity for it that will really help your business.
2 points. One is, what book does one come to mind that you'd recommend to kind of educate ourselves?
I'm writing one.
Tell us about the book that you're writing.
Yeah, so I'm in the final stages of editing a book where I'm trying to bring these concepts to people and allow them to build these deeper connections. It's specifically focused on B2B tech because that's the space that I've been working in for the past several years. But, you know, I'm writing one. It really hasn't been done in this way. It's kind of something that I made up over the last 20 years and it worked over and over again. And so I'm trying to bring it to people.
And where do we find out more? Should people connect with you on LinkedIn or what's best to kind of stay tuned into your journey?
Yeah, my website is NattyNatLennox, NattyNatLennox.com. So that's where I post updates and things like that.
And I want to say, as a fellow empath, I have empathy for everything that you were talking about, how it's both a blessing and a curse. The last thing I wanted to like lean into that you said was about when you talk to people, talk to them for understanding, not for selling. It's a core ethos in my company, We Are LA Tech. And I think it's something that most people on a baseline just don't understand. Like, we're all just human. So just talk to someone else like they're a human being and respect and honor them. It's part of where I personally get caught up in like the ickiness of marketing. The problem I have with marketing is actually not marketing. As you could tell by our earlier chat with creative agencies, I'm in actual admiration of effective communication. What I don't condone is preying on people's insecurities. And I think there's a huge difference. And I think that is a majority of marketing, at least that exists online, is preying on people's insecurities rather than creatively understanding and empathizing with the customer. And I think that most people don't see the difference. And because I'm so empathetic and see the difference, I feel like this almost is like self-induced martyr syndrome. And like, let me save the world from all the BS. But let's lean into that for a second, because if there is an opportunity for everybody to apply this understanding their customer as a human being rather than trying to sell them, I do think, as hokey as it sounds, that that will make the world a better place.
It's true. So, you know, I mean, first of all, I think it takes a level of self-reflection, right? Because you have to think to yourself, you know, what is your company bringing to the world? You have to really know your purpose, right? You have to understand what you're doing and why you're doing it and what the world's going to look like once, if you're successful in doing what you're doing. And I think, you know, there are a lot of companies out there that are, you know, of course, they're revenue driven, but they are also creating things that are going to move the world in the direction that it needs to go. They're disrupting industries that need disruption. They are providing technology that's never been available before and opens up new doors. You know, so there are a lot of great things happening, but, you know, that's the first piece of it. And then, you know, when you're looking at your customer and you're looking at, I freaking hate the word target. It's such a dehumanizing word, but it's what business owners, unfortunately, are told to call their customers, their targets. You know, when you're looking at that person or that group of people, spending time with them and really finding a reason to fall in love with them, like, you know, as if you're trying to make a new friend over a beer, and figuring out what drives them and what difference they're trying to make in the world, that will yield so much better results than the traditional marketing, you know, interview of how can I get you to buy my product, basically. So asking them those bigger questions, letting the conversation flow, figuring out why they got into their line of work or whatever in the first place, if you're selling them a B2B product, right? And like what they hope to accomplish in their careers, right? Like, all of that stuff will go into building these emotional connections and messaging that really resonates with them and purpose that really resonates with them. And on the best case scenario, it helps you build your product around them as well. It's not just your messaging. You're not giving them lip service. You're actually taking those insights and making your product better so that it's built around them. You're obsessed with making their lives better.
I love that, obsessed with making their lives better. For all of the listeners, like not to nap, but to like all the listeners, if anyone, this is my martyr syndrome coming out. If anyone tells you that you need them or their product and you won't succeed without them, run. Because that is just preying on your insecurities, because the only person and thing and entity that you need to succeed is your own belief system. There's no external thing that's the straight line guarantee that's going to skyrocket you to the top other than you. It's all internal. And then the external things, it's this like life plethora buffet. And there's so many different paths you could take. You just could go in so many different directions. You don't need one specific thing that's going to fix all your woes and make you who you want to be. You're going to make you who you want to be. And it's just like my martyr syndrome coming out, but telling you, let's get into your tech life. So from your creative agencies, where did you discover tech and your interest in it, and how did you evolve it?
So basically, it went kind of like this. I started to realize the power of these deep emotional connections and finding ways to fall in love with your customer in these agencies, right? So we were winning bigger accounts. I started using the digital ecosystem to try to build those connections. So once I understood those hooks and those emotional levers, I started to build like, you know, ecosystems full of stories and things for the businesses I was working for on Facebook. And this is like before Facebook had monetized, right? I was like, oh, the boomers are getting on Facebook. They're our buyers. They care about these things. Let's put together these beautiful stories on like company pages, because there were no Facebook ads back then. This is, people are like, why are you wasting time doing that? That's like millennial social media. I'm like, no, you don't get it. This is, you know, this is where people are consuming content, you know? And so that agency started winning bigger and bigger accounts, because by the time their customers, or sorry, but by the time their sales team and biz dev team ever spoke to them, their customer was already in love with the company, because they had already consumed all of these stories that spoke to the worldview on social media, right? And so that's the key. We are actually providing value and actually caring about the customer and figuring out how to make their lives better. But then we're expressing that in this digital ecosystem, so that by the time we ever talk to them, they're already so excited to meet us and connect with us and build this partnership. So that's the purpose of like a demand generation ecosystem. And what I found was tech companies, they were creating these tools, like tech companies are responsible for creating social media and all this stuff. But then they were kind of falling flat when it came to actually using them to connect with their customer. Like a lot of tech companies and founders, I find that they'll build this cool product and then they'll expect like everyone to be so wowed when they talk about their product. They're like, look at this cool thing. It can do this and this and this. And they're like, oh, don't you need it? Like, don't you want it? Like the product will sell itself. I hear that so many times. And I'm like, dude, no one's out there like just looking, waiting for your product. Like they care about their lives and they're being the hero in their story and what they need. Like we're all so busy and so just focused on surviving, you know, and thriving and like holding it all together. You have to come at them with something more than that. You know, you can't just say like, look at this cool widget that I built and expect them all to like fall over in excitement. And so I thought, okay, I can help tech companies do this. You know, I can help them really put a human element into their businesses and connect with customers in that way. So I moved across the world. And this is just, I really also love koalas and kangaroos. So I moved to Sydney and I built this tiny fintech startup, just a tiny fintech startup while I went to grad school. So I was doing both at one time. And I was like an advanced grad school, you know, late 30s grad school student. Oh, which I'm telling you, like if any of you guys get the opportunity to go to back to university when you're in your 30s, like you appreciate it more because one, you're paying for it. And if you know, if you didn't pay for it the first time, you're definitely paying for it this time. And then two, you actually like the ability to take time to learn again is just so, it's such a luxury, you know? Like before we're like, oh man, I got to get through this undergrad. And now we're like, oh wow, I get to sit down and actually just learn things. So yeah. So anyway, so I did that. I built this tiny fintech startup called Super. It was what's called over there a superannuation. It's like a 401k product that did ethical investing. And we connected with our customer by caring about what they cared about. So we let them take their 401k, if you will, called Super over there, and put it behind women-owned business or environmentally responsible business or whatever it was. So they were actually voting for the world that they wanted to see with their retirement funds. And then we put all this content together to help them learn about financial well-being and all this stuff. And that's how we grew our customer base. And so I did that for a little while. We sold that company. And I was kind of looking around and thinking like, okay,
wait, what do you mean we sold that company? Like that's a big deal.
Well, I wasn't the founder. I helped the founder. But I wasn't the founder. So, but I helped them get to a point where they could, you know, exit that company, which was nice. And I didn't know anything about it before. So that was like, oh, wow, now I know how that works. And next time, maybe I'll negotiate for some equity because that would be cool, which is another thing. I think a lot of newcomers attack, you know, even if you have a lot of experience in other companies, like little things like equity within your, you know, comp package is something that you just like don't even know, you know.
I think that that's a really important point that we should definitely like circle back to before we end the interview, mm-hmm. because I can't tell you how many of my friends did not negotiate for equity at like companies like Snapchat, where their peers who started much later did. Yeah. And they're like, wait, what? Yeah. So we'll circle back to that. But I, okay. So the company sells.
Yeah. Well,
and then you're like,
So then I'm like, okay, what am I going to do? Like, I want to do this for a bigger brand. Now that I've done it for a small, like, you know, teeny tiny startup, let's try to do this for a bigger brand. So I looked around and there was this billing app called Invoice2Go. I don't know. Have you heard of it? Invoice2Go?
No. Invoice2Go, yeah, no. Yeah,
like it was, it's a, such a cutesy name, but like it was one of the first billing apps in the App Store. And I fell in love with it because it was so, by the time I got there, they were so out of touch with who their customer actually was anymore. But they had gotten their start doing like what my dad did for a living. So my dad, he didn't have any college education, nothing. So he built this, you know, construction business like by himself with no business, you know, acumen. Like he didn't have any formal education. And he just figured it out on his own. And this app had gotten their start, like helping what they call in Australia tradies, you know, people who work in the trades, put together kind of a legitimate business from a billing and admin perspective and get paid fast so that they could, you know, continue to grow. And so I kind of fell in love with them for that reason, because I had watched my dad do that, like go from nothing to someone who had like a pretty thriving business. And when I got in there, I realized that, you know, although the world of what they call SMBs, the small, medium-sized businesses, had changed, they hadn't evolved with it. They had had the success with tradies, you know, in the past. And so they're like, okay, these, you know, typically people who work in construction are high earners and, you know, they're dudes and a lot of them don't have, you know, formal business education and all of this stuff, but they're using their hands and they're really high earners. So we're just going to continue to like go down that path, you know, because they are invoicing big bills and you know how fintech works, right? And we'll be successful and grow our business that way. Well, while they were doing this, right, this is like from the early 2000s on, while they were doing this, the face of small business owners completely shifted. So their biggest, you know, geography was the US, and the fastest growing demographic of small business owners in the US was specifically Black women at the time. Right. So it was women-owned business and specifically Black women at that time. And they had a bunch of, you know, largely white Caucasian males in their advertising. And these were guys and marketing and all the stuff, you know, everything that they were putting out there. And these were guys in, you know, construction gear. And so if I am a woman at all starting a small business and I'm looking for an invoicing app, like, and I'm getting paid ads and content like with a bunch of dudes in construction gear, like, is that going to be the first tool that I choose for myself? Probably not, you know? And they're like, why are we losing market share? We don't get it. You know, we're doing the same thing that made us successful, right? So, you know, coming into that business, it was a matter of saying like, listen, the world has changed. Like, let's dig in and let's see who are the small business owners now. You know, what are the fastest growing small businesses? What types of business are they in? You know, what services are they providing? What are they doing? And how do we really understand them and what they need? This is a progressive culture. Like they're like, okay, Nat, go do your thing, you know, which is awesome. And so I got to spend all of this time with women, which was so cathartic on every level. But, you know, women own businesses and say like, okay, what means the most to you? And I got all of these different answers. Like I wanted to be able to support my family while also being present for them, you know, so I left my corporate job and I started this thing or whatever, or I wanted to make a difference in this area. Or, you know, there was one woman who was in the trade. She was actually in construction and she was unpicking like what gave them a sense of significance and purpose in the world. And then I was figuring out like, okay, so Invoice2Go, how can you support? It's like, you know, I found that I wanted to be a woman and go into this male dominated field and kick ass, you know, like we built this like really beautiful ecosystem. I hosted a podcast where I got to like interview 100 women owned business, like women who own businesses from around the world, and just talk about their purpose and inspire others. We started a community, like all this cool stuff. When the pandemic happened, like some of our community members were actually hosting fundraisers for other community members to keep their businesses going. Like it was this just incredible thing. And Invoice2Go was sponsoring it and adding this value. And they saw, you know, we went from a company that was shrinking a user base when I came on to a company that was growing and, you know, gaining new users and recapturing market share month over month. And then we got to a place where we could sell to Bill.com. So then I was part of a big acquisition by Bill.com. So that was kind of like my real, okay, now I'm a tech marketer. You know, like, okay, now I guess I can give up the imposter syndrome. Like, I can do it now.
You became a community builder. And I think about, because I'm a community builder, I think about this quite often. And I've been building community for over 10 years. And all the words I want to use are like negative words. It's just, I mean, what I wanted to say, it's a very thankless job. And what I really admire about how you did it is like you were a covert community builder. You did it in a way that didn't really seem like community building, but had like fancy like job titles over it. But at the core essence, you were just a really dynamic community builder. And I think the reason I say all this rambling is I think community builders are the heart and soul to momentum and traction. And it's so unfortunate that community builders are usually the ones passed over. Like they don't have the status or the value or not taken seriously. At least if you have the community builder like job title or something like that, or that's how you're known. And I was thinking about this guy, Morgan, who started creating this series called Tech Breakfast Club. And it's so great. And I don't know why I was thinking about this, but I was thinking about this the other day. I'm like, I wonder how many people like top investors and the biggest companies understand how important Morgan's work is to whatever they have going on, because they're probably not really paying attention to Morgan's work, but it's Morgan's community work that is going to funnel people up to be fundable, to, you know, all these things. And anyway, all this to say is as you were talking, I'm like, oh my gosh, she figured out community building in a way to make it respected.
Yeah, I think we need more people in positions of power who understand the connection between empathy and community and revenue growth. Because what, you know, investors, and it's, I get it, right? Like what they respect is revenue growth and business growth and scalability. And the thing that drives that is actually, it's quite squishy in their mind. It's empathy with your customer, true community, and building those emotional connections. That's what drives revenue in today's world. There's a fundamental disconnect where right now they're still focusing on things like, let's reduce our CAC and let's, you know, like they're trying shortcuts to get to this thing that's actually quite nuanced. And so we just need more positions of people in positions of power who understand the connections between the two. And I think more and more of that will happen, honestly, as, you know, millennials and more women take positions of power who are naturally empathetic and natural empaths and have built careers in business and that kind of thing. So I think it's coming. I just think it takes a really forward thinking company right now to get the value.
So do you have other examples of how having an empathetic mindset has helped propel companies?
Yeah, absolutely. So after Invoice2Go, I actually worked for a company in a completely different field. So fraud prevention, so more of that cybersecurity. And this, you know, you could look at it and think like, ah, what a dry topic. How do we make this sexy? You know, like that's kind of like, how do we connect with customers here? The interesting thing is there's a lot of these deep tech companies out there, and they're struggling with how do we make our brand feel human? How do we connect with customers? You know, how do we possibly build those emotional connections when we're offering something that's more of a deep tech product? I did the same thing. So I went in. Telesign is a competitor to Twilio. They didn't used to be, but they had kind of this like archaic presence. They had like a very standard brand. They hadn't put much effort into their digital ecosystem, you know, same kind of thing, just hadn't updated. And so we once again went in and did a deep dive and thought, okay, what do our customers care about? What makes them tick? What makes them give a sense of significance? And we found that, you know, the customers that we were going after, these tech companies that needed, you know, fraud prevention, identity theft prevention, security, they cared most about building their products and providing an excellent experience to their customers, right? So like if you're Meta, for instance, you want your social media experience to be like the most positive and, you know, engaging that it could possibly be. If you are, you know, a grocery delivery service, you want that to be seamless and you want people to feel like safe and secure and you want the service to actually improve your end customer's life. So what we found is like we could take the anxiety away that something bad was going to happen on their app. That's how we could provide value, right? So then they could continue to be the hero in the story. And so we built a brand around that. So we built this beautiful brand for the cybersecurity company, and it was based on giving our customer the chance to be a hero to their customer, right? And the biggest compliment that I ever received actually came from one of Twilio's marketers, because they were our biggest competitor and we'd just stolen a bunch of market share from them with this like we rebranded, we did this, and we'd stolen like a crap. Like I can't actually say publicly how much market share we gained that year, but it was a lot. Regardless of the type of tech business, like you will never go wrong by truly finding a reason to fall in love with your customer.
How do we community builders pitch it, not to a company, but pitch it to society, like our business society, to like take us seriously? Like, what do we need to do as community builders to represent ourselves? Like, how do we need to communicate our roles so that they could hear us? Because it is a totally different ecosystem. This one, community building, is absolutely heart-driven, and it's vital that it's heart-driven. And it doesn't have that, like, how many people are signing up for this or that? It's just, it doesn't work like that. And then the revenue side is like, how many transactions do we have? You know, so how do we communicate so that we're respected?
Yeah, so I approach it two ways. So the first way is education, and then the second way is through modeling and proof, right? So on an education perspective, you know, when I'm talking to investors or founders or whatever it is, depending on who they are, I will break it down for them. You know, if there's someone who likes to learn, I can tell that they're really into it. I will get so granular that I start talking to them about the fact that human beings evolved to live in tribes and were doing so for hundreds of thousands of years. And therefore, tribal proof is your most powerful tool as a business, right? And so here's all the ways that you build that. It is ingrained into our brains. We can't get out of it, right? It's hundreds of thousands of years of evolution, right? That's how we are. You know, so, and here's all the ways that we do that. Here are the tools in our marketing mix that drive that reputational awareness, that tribal awareness. And then, you know, as you look at the correlation between revenue and sales and our marketing mix, and we model our marketing mix as a whole, we don't individually try to nickel and dime it and piece it out. And the reason is that some marketing activities will have a really easy ROI conversion. So like paid acquisition, for instance, paid advertising. It is really easy to say, well, I put this many dollars into this ad and I got this many clicks and this many people converted and blah, blah, blah. It is really hard to understand that by the time that person clicked on that ad, they'd already seen like six pieces of brand content and they'd been a member of this community for 2 years online and they'd heard three of your podcasts, right? All of that stuff feels squishier to investors and business leaders. So what we do instead is we model the correlation between marketing activities and experiments and revenue growth over time. And typically you see a lag, right? Like a slight lag because marketing isn't instant. Any of the tech founders out there take one thing away. Marketing is not instant. It is an investment that creates a lift over time. So basically we model, here's our marketing effort. You know, here's all of our community activity and our campaigns and blah, blah, blah. And we'll see like you put the effort in and then there's like a small lag in time and then you see the revenue start to go up, right? And then if we reduce the effort in marketing, we actually see the revenue to start to go down at every level. So we've got marketing mix modeling and then we've got a basic education and we put the two together and usually we get the point across. Sometimes you don't. And those businesses, I can't help them. You have to say like some people aren't ready. And if they're not ready, it's not my job to get them ready. You know, I can try to give them the tools and I can try to open their minds up. But I also, there's so many businesses out there that are ready. I'm going to focus on those.
It's so interesting to me that when there are budget cuts, one of the first things cut is community. And that just makes no sense to me. Very interesting section of the world that I live in.
It is very interesting. And, you know, marketing as a whole. So community is often, you know, on the marketing team. Sometimes it's on the product team, but it's often on the marketing team within a corporation. And marketing as a whole is typically cut. And I have a couple of theories for that. There is that fundamental disconnect, right, with how human beings operate and make purchasing decisions in today's world versus some of the traditional business speak and or traditional business mindsets. And so there is a disconnect oftentimes, but what you'll find is more progressive companies and more progressive leaders, they get it and they understand the value of marketing, and that's where you won't see cuts. And it takes a really strong, you know, marketing leader to help make those connections and drive those connections home and prove the value to the business. So it's coming. I think the world is changing, but I think right now it's not necessarily completely understood yet.
So I've been doing Wearily Tech for over 10 years. And if you were to wipe out all of the community builders in Los Angeles, Los Angeles would not have a tech ecosystem. Even if all the venture capitalists still existed, all the entertainment, like it's us community builders that create the lure for people to like want to move to the city to build their tech company. So it's just very, and we're all, as a community of community builders here, we're all very underappreciated. We all know one another. And it's a very interesting ecosystem. I do want to circle back to what we talked about with equity, because I think that that is so important for anyone maybe going up for their next role or discovering their role right now. We need to speak up for equity. What are your thoughts on this?
So I have two thoughts. So now that I've kind of entered the leadership suite, I'm leading teams, or, you know, and smaller businesses, I've led the entire marketing org. What I find is when I interview women, especially, they're less likely still to ask for what they're worth on the market. So they typically, when we ask, you know, what are you looking for? They'll typically quote a rate that is far below what their male counterparts quote for me. And then they don't ask for equity. They don't ask about it. It's not something that they think about. And, you know, if you are spending your waking hours, we only get so many waking hours in our lives, right? You are valuable. You, like all of the experiences that you have and everything that has led you to where you are today, you are bringing to your job every day, right? And so if you are dedicating your waking hours to that company, you should ask for a piece of it. You know, if they're handing out equity, if that's part of the comp package, you know, talk about what is my equity package look like? What does my vesting schedule look like? you know, how do I have opportunities to earn more equity in the future if I am going, you know, if I'm moving up in the company? That should be a normal part of your conversation. And there are plenty of people that you can reach out to who are experts in the subject to, you know, ask for what industry standards are and that kind of thing. But go into that conversation knowledgeable about what you should typically expect. Go in and ask for 10 to 20% more than you think you can get and let them talk you down, you know, and be confident and the company will respect you for it.
I'm glad you ended on that. The company will respect you for it. As a culture, we don't want to be a bother. As a culture, I'm not saying anyone individually, but as a culture, we don't want to be a bother. We don't want to be pushy. We don't want to ask for too much. We don't want to be a burden, blah, blah, blah. How do we know what that line is of stating our worth and not over becoming off as entitled or something, whatever hang up that we have collectively as a community?
You know, I'd say that if you have done your homework, and you deliver your message with, hey, here's my research. And it doesn't have to be a controversial conversation. You can say, hey, here's the research that I've done. Here's what I can bring to the table for the company. Here's what I'm excited about this position. And, you know, here's what I think it's worth based on the homework that I've done. And you tell me what you think. And let's find a place where we're both feeling happy and satisfied. And the company will respect that because, you know, smart companies know that happy employees are productive employees. They're employees that show up every day excited to work, you know, bring their best to the table. And that's the only way to lead a company anymore, right? So if they don't respond in that way, that's a sign that that's an environment that you don't want to be in.
I love that. Filtering processes in the world. Sometimes we just filter out what is not right for us. It's not about not being right for them. It's we're filtering out what's not right for us.
Yeah. And I think that that's a mindset that is specific to women. I find is like, we want to be chosen. Like we're like, oh, am I good enough? Like choose me, you know, am I really good enough for this job? And it's like, honey, look at your resume. Like half the time I'm looking at the women who are interviewing for positions and saying like, when I'm hiring young creatives, I'm like, look at what you've done. You're really talented. You know, stand behind that. We're lucky to have you.
So many things come to mind, and I'm sure it's coming to mind for everybody listening too. It's in end, love yourself, state what you're worth, go after it. We're in control of our own destiny. All the cliches. A few last questions as we wrap up. Who is a must follow? Somebody that you just think we have to tap into. It could be an author, a YouTuber, a podcast, a Twitter profile.
Yeah. So I've thought a lot about this question because I listened to your podcast and it's amazing. And I thought about how I wanted to answer it. And I'm the strong believer in the power of female friendships and mentioning your friends' names in rooms full of opportunities. And so I actually want to mention four women. They're not famous. They're not famous at all, but they're brilliant and they're doing cool things. So the last couple companies that I helped in the brand and demand space were aerospace companies. And while I was working in that space with a couple of aerospace tech companies, I met a ton of women working in aerospace. And it's an interesting thing because, you know, women in the space industry, like there weren't a lot of women celebrated in the space industry traditionally, and it's still very male dominated. And so there are just a few women that I want to mention. One is Diana Klikova. She is a friend of mine. She's a chief brand officer at a company called Privateer, who is, you know, this company is battling the problem of overcrowding in space. And she is a powerhouse in so many ways. She thinks about brand differently from a visual perspective than anyone else in the industry. She is an advocate for shaking things up, and she is just so cool. So I want to tell everybody to follow Privateer and Diana. The next one is Crystal Capiano. She is the chief legal officer at a company called Vast. They are building the first private space station, and she has grown Vast by leaps and bounds, helped grow Vast by leaps and bounds. And she's also this outgoing advocate for smart, strong women in the space industry. She said one of my favorite things that I have ever heard, And it is. She said she handles like the people operations as well within the company. And she said, I love women who are described as HR nightmares. And she's like, the reason is they probably stepped on toes because they're brilliant. So I know if I give that woman the right space, she will move mountains for my company. And that is one of the coolest things I've ever heard a woman leader say. It was so profound. So anyway, follow Crystal and Bast. She's incredible. And then the last two women I want to mention are direct reports, former direct reports of mine that I want to lift up in every way. They're both also brilliant. One is Carice Henry. She is the marketing manager, a marketing manager at Astroscale right now. She was formerly my protege at Telesign, and she has this incredible ability to connect dots and understand the customer. And she has that deep empathy mindset and also remains calm and collected in high pressure situations like no one I've ever met in my life. And then the other one, last one I want to mention is Victoria Heath. She now leads the marketing team at Leo Labs. I handed it off to her when I left, and she is one of the best content marketers I've ever met. She is incredible at taking scientific content and making it actually relatable and easy to read and building a content system out of it. So yeah, I wanted to mention all of those women. They're incredible, and women in the space industry, they're becoming more prevalent, but it isn't an industry that traditionally had a ton of women leaders. So I want to lift them.
I love that you did that. And we'll include their links in the show notes. You'll message us their LinkedIn URLs, and then we'll have it in the show notes for you so you guys can easily click away. I really, really like that you did that. Your favorite software. What is your favorite software? It could be a mobile app. It could be a website you go to. Anything.
I am just a huge advocate of Loom. L-O-M. So what I find is if I'm giving a brand presentation, a campaign presentation, I will actually create a video of me looming it as well and then send that afterwards. And that way people can watch it again. If they didn't absorb something, didn't catch something, they can watch it again. You know, they can watch it later when they've got more headspace, if they were kind of multitasking during the meeting or whatever it is. And it just helps people absorb material and really have something to reference so that we can all work more efficiently.
That is a great one. I think that whenever I create a personal Loom video for someone that I'm messaging and I want to show that I'm genuinely being very sincere, I'll throw together a Loom video. It's such a great tool. And what is a piece of advice that you've been given that you appreciate over your career that's really helped propel you?
So when I was a really young designer working in a creative agency, the senior designer told me, whatever you're creating, whether it is a video, whether it is, you know, a plan, a piece of content, always design a bit of imperfection into it. So, you know, basically like don't make things too polished, right? If something is super polished, then it doesn't feel human. Like allow the humanity to shine through. And it has been, I mean, this was like almost 20 years ago now, and it has been the best piece of advice that I've received.
Yeah, I wrote this on a LinkedIn post that I think it was yesterday. I said something like the best growth hack is being a human or something like that.
Be real. Human beings are so, we're messy and beautiful and complicated. Like people are so incredible. And just everything starts from finding a reason to love everyone and love yourself, and then just being genuine and vulnerable and moving forward.
100%. How can people connect with you?
Yeah. So my website is nattinatlenox.com. I think I mentioned it a little bit earlier, but it's nattinatlenox.com. So there's all kinds of ways to connect with me, my LinkedIn, et cetera. I am super open and I love people. So, you know, shoot me any pieces of advice or anything that you need.
Awesome. And we'll include it in the show notes as well. Nat, thank you so much for hanging out with the Women in Tech podcast. Just appreciate you.
This was so fun. I feel like we've had a soul connection here. So I'm so happy.
I'm so happy as well. And to connect and collaborate with more amazing women in tech around the world, remember to go to the Women in Tech community at womenintechvip.com. That's womenintechvip.com. Say hello on social at Women in Tech Show on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, on all the things. I will talk to you, see you all the things in the next episode.
Bye, guys. Hi, this is Nat Lennox. I'm a creative tech marketer based in Los Angeles, California. I've worked in fintech, deep tech, data, cybersecurity, and SMB tech, and you're listening to Women in Tech.
The Women in Tech podcast is hosted and produced by me, Esprit Devora,
with help from Janice Geronimo,
edited by Corey Jennings,
production and voiceover by Adam Carroll,
and music from Jay Huffman Live and Epidemic Sound. The Women in Tech podcast is a WeAreTech.fm production.
Thank you for being a listener of the Women in Tech podcast. To support the podcast and cheer us on, become an MVL, Most Valuable Listener, go to womenintech.love, linked in the show notes.